Joseph Smith had none of Johnson's learning or finesse, but he was mammoth too and a genius in what the literary scholar Harold Bloom has called religion-making. Joseph Smith is one of those large Americans who, like Abraham Lincoln, came from nowhere. Reared in a poor Yankee farm family, he had less than 2 years of formal schooling and began life without social standing or institutional backing. His family rarely attended church. Yet in the 14 years he headed the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Smith created a religious culture that survived his death, flourished in the most desolate regions of the United States, and continues to grow worldwide after more than a century and a half. In 1830, at the age of 24, he published the Book of Mormon, the only person in American history to produce a second Bible, an entirely new revealed work to stand beside the traditional scriptures. He built cities and temples and gathered thousands of followers before he was killed at age 38. Smith is interesting for what he was, as well as for what he did. He was the closest America has come to producing a biblical-style prophet, one who spoke for God with the authority of Moses or Isaiah. He was not an eloquent preacher. He is not known to have preached a single sermon before organizing the church in 1830. But he spoke in God's voice in revelations he compiled and published. A revelation typically began with words like, "Hearken, O ye people which profess my name, saith the Lord your God." Many thought him presumptuous, if not blasphemous, and he made no effort to prove them wrong. He did not defend his revelations or give reasons for belief. He dictated the words and let people decide. Everything he taught and most of what he did originated in these revelations. The question of this book is how such a man came to be in the age of railroads and the penny press. What was the logic of his visionary life? Joseph Smith did not offer himself as an exemplar of virtue. He told his followers not to expect perfection. Smith called himself a rough stone, thinking of his own impetuosity and lack of polish. He was sensitive to insults and could not stand to be crossed. Twice he was brought to trial before one of his own church councils for scolding offenders too severely. He so dominated the rooms he entered that some thought him arrogant. But it was his iron will that brought the church, the cities, and the temples into existence. He was warm and affectionate, too. He loved to sit in council with his brethren. When imprisoned with a group of them, he wrote his wife Emma about being chained together in the bonds of love. Letter after letter to Emma expressed affection for her and the children. That his doctrine of plural marriage drove a wedge between the two of them was the great sorrow of his life. He said once to his people, "You never knew my heart." Perhaps he cannot be entirely known, but my aim has been to imagine him as fully as the records allow. I have also undertaken to explore a side of Joseph Smith not adequately examined in other biographies, his religious thought. There are good reasons for this neglect. His thought is not easily encapsulated or analyzed. His teachings came primarily through his revelations, which, like other forms of scripture, are epigrammatic and oracular. He never presented his ideas systematically in clear logical order. They came in flashes and bursts. Nor did he engage in formal debate. His most powerful thoughts were assertions delivered as if from heaven. Assembling a coherent picture out of many bits and pieces leaves room for misinterpretations and forced logic. Even his loyal followers disagree about the implications of his teaching. Despite the difficulty in extracting its essence, the thought cannot be neglected. Doctrine attracted the early converts, most of whom had not met Joseph Smith before joining the church, and remained a significant reason for the survival of Mormonism after his death. His followers derived their energy and purpose from the religious world he brought into being. Imperfect as a summary must be, that world has to be recreated to understand Joseph Smith's life and influence. A rhetorical problem vexes anyone who writes about the thought of Joseph Smith.